This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
We have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast. Welcome to Utopia.
Hey, everybody, welcome in. It is a mailbag edition of the Utopia Football Podcast. In between week 13 and week 14, the Texans bye week. And it is great to be with you. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. Whatever it is you celebrate, happy whatever. I'm Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. weekdays on the station. And you can get us on the Odyssey app, terrestrial radio, YouTube, Twitch. If you live in my building, you can hear me through the door out in the hallway. I wouldn't recommend listening that way. It's creepy. We've got a big mailbag edition of the show today. We actually have, for a bye week, we've got a lot to talk about. There will be no late week episode this week because there's no game to preview. And I'm headed out on vacation for a few days, starting on Friday. Friday through Monday, I'll be off the air. But back next week with a mailbag and a preview of the Dolphins game. We'll be back on a normal schedule next week. So no preview. And then obviously no recap since there's no game. But we got a nice mailbag here to get into today. And we certainly have some things to dig into prior to the mailbag with the Azeez Al-Shaair situation. This is the first podcast that I've done since the suspension was handed down, the three-game suspension handed down by the league, by John Runyon, who's the vice president of football operations and a former very dirty offensive lineman. That is definitely worth mentioning. And then I think what's got everybody talking as pertains to Azeez Al-Shaair is Nick Caserio's press conference yesterday. So if you haven't seen that, I would suggest you go out of your way to find it. Nick was very passionate in his defense of Azeez Al-Shaair, the person, in defense of the, at least the magnitude of the suspension that Shire got. It's very evident that Nick Caserio at a minimum feels it was too long, three games. They are going to appeal it. And we'll talk about that in just a little bit as well. So we'll dig into that shortly. A reminder off the top here to hit the subscribe button if you haven't already. Growth numbers year over year are good for the podcast, but the more you subscribe, the more people you tell, the more likely it is that I keep doing this podcast for a long, long time. So hit that subscribe button, rate, review, whatever it is you want to do there. That always helps as well. And a quick reminder, we're about to do a mailbag. The next episode we do will be a mailbag next week. So if things come up over the weekend or you think of some things, are we getting more news on Azeez Al-Shaair because they are appealing this suspension, drop it into the mailbag, houmailbag@gmail.com, houmailbag@gmail.com. I'll leave that at the bottom of the screen for you in case you hear anything that tickles your fancy today that you want to drop an opinion on. So my take on the whole Azeez Al-Shaair situation, I think the suspension of three games is way too long for this. I don't have an issue with him getting suspended for a game. I actually put up a poll about this asking all of you how many games should he be suspended for. We had, I don't know, a couple thousand people vote in that poll. The choices were three or more, two, one, or zero. I don't think it's a big shock that a majority of people answered one, like 56% of the people. The next answer, and maybe this shouldn't be a surprise either since I probably have largely Texan fans following me, the next most voted on answer was zero at about 23%. So 80% of Texan fans or 80% of my followers, which I think is a big overlap with Texan fans, 80% of the people who responded to that poll thought that Azeez Al-Shaair should get either one game or no suspension at all. The other two choices, two and three plus, were both divided about evenly, each about 10% and change. I would have given him a one-game suspension, and it has more to do with the overall aftermath and everything else that went on. And that was actually something that was cited in the letter to Azeez Al-Shaair from John Runyon, who runs discipline for the NFL. I'm going to make sure I have that letter pulled up. I've got it right here. He even mentions after the illegal hit, you proceeded to engage in a brawl, which you escalated when you pulled an opponent down to the ground by the face mask. After the referee announced that you were disqualified for the hit and your unsportsmanlike acts, you removed your helmet and re-engaged with your opponent while walking down and across the field, which started another physical confrontation near the end zone. I would have given him a one-game suspension based on the combination of the severity of the hit and the aftermath. If had there been no aftermath, had there been just the hit itself on Trevor Lawrence, resulting in an ejection, you know, I'm looking at it from what would the discipline be? Okay, so I'm looking at it from the standpoint of if this is landing on my desk after he's been ejected for a game. I would have given him a hefty fine for sure. I don't think I would have suspended him for a game, but I do think that there's something to be said about the scene that he made. And again, I don't know what was said the second time around that led to a second confrontation and a second melee. I would have talked to Aziz Al-Shaair, though, before dishing out any punishment. And I think there are a few things about this whole thing that are just bullshit. And I think a big one is that John Runyan, whether it's his policy or the league's policy, does not talk to the player who they're punishing before issuing the punishment. It's almost like not letting a criminal take the stand in court before you dish out a punishment or a sentence for them. So I think that's at the very least a flawed process. So I've got a big issue with that. I like Nick Caserio, who I thought was excellent in that press conference. A lot of Texan fans agree with that. A lot of people really, I think Nick's popularity increased after that press conference, had an issue with this last paragraph, especially in light of the fact that they didn't talk to or meet with Aziz Al-Shaair. Your lack of sportsmanship and respect for the game of football and all those who play, coach, and enjoy watching it is troubling and does not reflect the core values of the NFL. Your continued disregard for NFL playing rules puts the health and safety of both you and your opponents in jeopardy and will not be tolerated. I don't have a big issue with that last sentence because I do feel like some of the priors for Aziz Al-Shaair probably factored in. He'd been fined several times for various transgressions over the last 2 years. The punch that he threw on a Bears player out of bounds this year, a late hit way out of bounds in the Titans game a couple weeks ago, a couple incidents with the Titans when he played for them last year against New Orleans and Tampa Bay. So I don't have an issue with those being part of the conversation. I do have an issue with them going from 0 to 100 like that. You know, like that you go from guys never been suspended to 3 games at this juncture of the season, too, where the Texans' next 3 games are being played within 11 days, I think is absurd. And I do take issue with your lack of sportsmanship and respect for the game of football and all those who play, coach, and enjoy watching it is troubling and does not reflect the core values of the NFL. Make no mistake, there is one person in particular who has a right to be really angry about this hit, really, really angry, and that's Trevor Lawrence, who took the hit on. Now, Trevor Lawrence probably could have done himself some favors by sliding a little bit earlier, but I'm not going to deny that Aziz Al-Shaair, it was a hard hit. The forearm follow through on the head, I think, is something that I said on the post-game show on Sunday would absolutely factor into a punishment, and sure enough, it did. Video shows you striking the head and neck area of Trevor Lawrence after he clearly gets down in a foot-first slide. You led with your forearm and helmet and delivered a forceful blow to the head and neck area. Now, I don't know where the leading with the helmet thing is. His helmet didn't come close to Trevor Lawrence's helmet. And it was the forearm shiver across the head with an elbow brace, driving his head into the ground. That would have factored into my sentencing as well of Trevor Lawrence. But I'm somewhere between 0 and 1 as far as the suspension goes. I can understand a 1-game suspension. I can't understand a 3-game suspension. And the judgment that goes on here, like that somehow all of those who play, all of those who coach and everybody watching it have some sort of right to be upset enough to be mentioned in a letter to Aziz Al-Shaair is, I'll use Nick's word, it's embarrassing that Aziz Al-Shaair is some scofflaw that is out there headhunting people intentionally is silly. It's disrespectful. That's my thought on that. I agree with, by and large, most of what Nick Caserio said in his press conference on Tuesday. The only part I really disagree with is when he said Bobby Slowick's a great offensive coordinator. I disagree with that right now. I don't think he's a horrible offensive coordinator. Then there's taking up for your guy. Great offensive coordinator, might have been a bit much, but you know, Nick's got his guys back. So we'll see what happens with the appeal. For those who don't know, the appeal process is there are four former players selected by the players union. Any one of the four will hear Azeez Alshire's appeal. And unlike the suspension getting doled out initially, he'll have his day in court with whoever gets selected to listen to his appeal. The four players are Jordy Nelson, former wide receiver, Kevin Mawai, former offensive lineman, former lineman Ramon Foster, and former inside linebacker Derek Brooks. So I think if we're rooting for somebody here to listen to Azeez's case and maybe be a little bit sympathetic to the plight of the inside linebacker trying not to hit a sliding quarterback, it would be Derek Brooks. Although I think Derek Brooks played at a time where we didn't have the sliding rules in effect like we do right now. It's a little more of a physical game when Derek Brooks played. But that's who I'm rooting for. They get selected randomly. So it's a 1-in-4 shot that you get Derek Brooks. So that's the appeal process. If I had to make a prediction, and I don't know when y'all are listening to this, if some appeal or new decision comes down between now and this episode dropping, I would think it gets reduced from 3 games to 2 games. Denzel Perryman was suspended 3 games last year. It was his first suspension ever for similar stuff, you know, blows to the head, helmet to helmet, dangerous play. This is when Denzel was on the Texans and he appealed it. And I think James Thrash was the one who heard the appeal, former receiver, and it got reduced to 2 games. So if I had to predict, I would predict it gets reduced to 2 games, but I'm going based on what I think the situation deserves. And the thing that I'm probably discounting is just how much of the public rhetoric, outrage, outcry, pearl clutching to some degree is going on with this particular hit and the aftermath of it. So the league might almost feel pressure to keep it at 3 just based on how much people outside of Houston are upset about this. All right, so those are my feelings on that. Let's get into the mailbag, houmailbag@gmail.com. And I've got it printed out here. Very first one is from Bill, and all he says is week 14 bye is bullshit. I agree. This feels awfully late for a bye, especially in light of the fact that everybody played Thanksgiving weekend. Like, you couldn't have done this Thanksgiving weekend where you give a few teams a bye then, and now it's not a week later here. Week 14, think about that. The Texans have been playing football longer consecutively than any team in the league right now, because they started with the Hall of Fame game. And I realize hardly any of the guys who are playing right now for the Texans actually played in the Hall of Fame game. But my point is, they've been at training camp, you know, 7 to 10 days earlier than everybody else because of the Hall of Fame game. They went to camp in, I think, July 19th was the date. Everybody else is going to camp the following week. So they've been starting a week earlier than everybody else. And every other team in the league, other than the teams with a bye this weekend, there's 6 teams with a bye this weekend, has had a break at some point here. And so I think, yeah, like, I get why they put the bye this week for the Texans. I think it's because they've got the 3 games in 11 days coming up, and the bye is much needed. That what they have coming out of the bye, those 3 games in 11 days, this Texan schedule, I'm telling you, you know, it's almost like for years and years, well, not years and years, but at least for the last 2 or 3 years, we've all been going, man, can we get some little spice injected into this schedule? You know, all these noon Sunday kickoffs, they went like 25 straight weeks kicking off at noon on Sunday. And I will say this, like, for somebody who works all day on game day, I kind of like the routine, and somebody who works morning radio, I do like being in bed at a reasonable hour for Monday. Now, that said, I was as excited as everybody when the schedule had all sorts of juicy, spicy start times and travel and all this other stuff. But it's turned into a very difficult schedule, you know, with the very, very early start with the Hall of Fame game, with the week 14 bye, certainly with the games coming up outside of the bye in such a short period of time. So I don't know how the season's going to end for the Texans. I would guess either 9-8 or 10-7. They'll win the division. They'll win a home playoff game, and then they'll get beat in the second round. That's my current status on the team. That's what I feel they're capable of right now. I am open to them changing my mind against the Dolphins, Chiefs, and Ravens over an 11-day period. Very open to it. But I do think already that whatever the Texans number is next year for win totals in Vegas, I'm going over. I don't care. I'll blindly take the over because I think, one, they will make some moves to improve the offensive line, which is really, it's the only part of the team that's really been performing, and them and the tight ends kind of, the only one that's really performed at a sustained piss poor level. Now they've gotten better recently, but I'm talking about that stretch from like the third or fourth week of the season through like week 10 or 11, especially that 7, 8, and 9 week period where the protection for CJ Stroud was just abysmal. So I think they'll make moves there, both in coaching and in personnel on the offensive line. And I think CJ is going to have learned a lot from this year. And I think we get more of the CJ next year that look like the rookie CJ than the one that has struggled at times this year. Although I still kind of agree with D'Amico and Nick that CJ's actually had probably a much better year than the numbers would indicate. But think about the schedule. No Hall of Fame game next year, so they're starting training camp at a normal time. They're not going to be crossing over with the NFC North either. I think that should be pointed out. Three of their losses are to the Vikings, the Lions, and the Packers, who are arguably three of the best 6 or 7 teams in football. You're going to be crossing over next year with the NFC West. That's a division that the Seahawks are leading right now with a 500 record, with the Cardinals and the Rams and the Niners. There's no horrible teams in that division, but it ain't the NFC North this year. So that'll be number two. Number three, I don't think you're going to get a period on the schedule with three straight primetime games. That was excessive, I think, that you didn't really have a normal schedule for over a month or for about a month. The bye week will be earlier than week 14. I can almost assure you of that. And then I don't think they're going to get a 3-game in 11-day over the holiday thing. Like, you know, I doubt they're on Christmas next year. Maybe they will be. Who knows? They make a deep playoff run. They could be right back to a schedule like this. So some of my assessment is factoring in that I don't think they're going to be as hot a ticket next year as they were coming into this year. I hope I'm wrong, because if I'm wrong, it means that they overachieved in the postseason. And I would like nothing more than to be wrong about that. Thank you, Bill, for the question. I'm a schedule nerd, so I love stuff like that. Chris in Louisville. Hey, Sean, this is Chris from Louisville. This is going to be real quick. I don't know when you'll get around to reading these. Reading them right now, Chris. Call me crazy or just a delusional fan, but I think what happened with Aziz Al-Shaair may just galvanize this team into being the best version of itself. I don't know if that means Super Bowl or not, but this gives the team something to rally around. And if they were playing on inspired before, they certainly won't be coming out of the – if they were – okay, anyways, LFG, let's fucking go. I think there might have been a verb or something missing on that last part. The point being that Chris is making, could this be a rallying point? Seth and I talked about this on Payne and Pendergast today. Could this be sort of an us against the world, a little like the Astros? Houston against everybody. Could this be a Houston versus everybody moment for the Houston Texans? I think it could be. I don't know. There's no chance that I don't think it's something that collapses the team for sure. If anything, it's going to galvanize the football team. And I suppose used properly, that it could galvanize them. I'll say this. If I'm a player and I'm watching the way D'Amico Ryans handled this on Monday in his press conference, and I'm watching the way Nick Caserio handled it on Tuesday in his press conference, I do feel like it's a unified front over there. They're unified in the building. Hey, if I'm a future free agent and I'm watching Nick Caserio go to war for Aziz Al-Shaair, that factors into my thinking when I think about where I'm going to go play next. I think what Nick did and the way D'Amico's handled it has been an outstanding billboard for free agents thinking of coming to Houston or getting traded to Houston at some point. Could it be? Sure. I mean, I'm not in the locker room, so I don't know just how I don't know what the vibe is on a day-to-day basis behind the scenes over there, but I certainly think there's, from a galvanizing standpoint, nothing bad can come out of it, that's for sure. Dennis is in Budapest. Dennis, my man, good meeting you and your family a few weeks ago at a Texans game. He echoes what Chris is saying. Want to continue to fight the good fight for Aziz Al-Shaair along with you guys. For ammunition, could you ask Ben Gary, our producer, or someone to put together a solid highlight of Seth arguing against the Bill Simmonses and the Twitter hypocrites of the world? Yesterday's show was gold in that regard, but I cannot post a 4-hour content and expect these fake people to listen. If you could do that, just post it on X. I'm sure your followers will hop on. I appreciate that, Dennis. Ben's got a lot on his plate. So if Ben's listening and he's of mine to do that, then I'll let him do that. But I appreciate the love. He says also, do you see this team finding fuel in all this drama and coming out hitting on all cylinders in week 15? Have an awesome bye week trip. I will have an awesome bye week trip. I think it's a similar question to what Chris was just asking. Independent of Aziz Alshire and feeling like the league is against them, I think the bye week comes at a great time. I think Miami, you know, Miami feels scarier than they actually are just because of all that speed they have on offense. And the Texans will miss Aziz Alshire from that standpoint of making the middle of the field feel like an area that is dangerous to go to, you know. And I think the combination of missing Aziz and Jalen Petrie, you could argue those are your two most physical players right there. So I think that's an issue. But I do feel like the Dolphins, and we'll do a Dolphins preview next week. We got the bye week this week. But just to give you maybe a little blurb on the Dolphins game, I do feel like the Dolphins are a team that if you get on them early and you get an early lead, that is a team that's soft enough to kind of fold up tents on you. I know the Texans have had a hard time putting teams away. But I could see if you're able to get up 10-0 or 14-0 in the first quarter, that is not a mentally tough team. That is a soft football team, the Dolphins. So we'll see what happens. Dennis, appreciate you. Jason and Leander, my wrestling fan, says, Sean, I probably should have thought more about this before asking such a crass question about D'Amico Ryans. Okay, let me back up. Jason's first email to me was basically, D'Amico Ryans, what the fuck? And admittedly, it's hard for me to even know, forget about the crass language, which I approve of. It's hard for me to know what you're talking about, Jason, if you don't give me a little bit more to dig into. But he clarified and said, I was disappointed in D'Amico's comments, and I guess my revised question would be, do you think D'Amico was right, partially right, or wrong? And again, D'Amico made a lot of comments over the last few days, Jason. I'm going to assume that it's the commentary. This is the commentary I'm going to evaluate from D'Amico, which was his commentary leading in to his Monday press conference where he talked about the situation with Aziz Alshire and admitted that we don't teach it that way. He was lamenting that the hit ever happened. He hoped that Trevor Lawrence was okay, but ... And then D'Amico went on to kind of skewer the Jaguars for a couple of minutes for how they handled their business on their own sideline. Handled their business maybe in the aftermath. I think Aziz is partially culpable in the second fight, that at least partially, if not fully. I don't know. They were in commercials, so I don't know what exactly happened to start that second fight, other than Aziz looked like a lunatic with his helmet off and screaming and having to be held back by Will Anderson. I liked D'Amico's Monday press conference, so I'm not going to say right, wrong, partially wrong, this, that, the other. I like that D'Amico pointed out Jacksonville's role in the whole thing escalating. I think that's one way to take up for your team. And I would expect him to do that. You know, here's the thing. This is the spot D'Amico and Nick are both in. For anybody looking for them to give analysis on this situation as if they are a talking head on TV, giving a fully unbiased, unfiltered, no battle red colored glasses assessment of what went on is folly. That's silly. They've got a locker room and a building to think about over there. So I'm assessing how they did from a standpoint, if I'm a Texan or I'm a Texans fan. If I'm a Texans fan, honestly, I could give a fuck that D'Amico is acknowledging the Trevor Lawrence side of this thing, or that he's putting a majority of the blame on Aziz and absolving the Jacksonville Jaguars. Who gives a shit? He's the coach of the Houston Texans. I'm a Texan fan. I'm coming at it from a standpoint of what are D'Amico and Nick saying that makes things better for the Texans in this situation? I think the only argument you could make that what D'Amico and Nick said from a Texans perspective would be construed as negative would be, okay, did they, particularly Nick, with his comments, poison the water at all for whatever appeal happens with Aziz Alshire? I think that's an argument I'll listen to. When you're calling the league office embarrassing, when you're saying that you're speaking for a number of teams that feel this way, when you talk about how they're not consistent, to Nick's credit, he brought evidence with him to the party that they have not been consistent with these punishments, vis-a-vis what they gave Aziz Alshire compared to guys like Kareem Jackson, Derwin James, Brian Branch. I thought Nick did a fantastic job there. But as far as people like he should have mentioned this or, oh, like I feel like you're minimizing the hit on Trevor. Sorry, I don't give a fuck that they're minimizing the hit on Trevor. I'm a Texan fan. Trevor's going to be okay. If Trevor were in the hospital in a coma, I would be a little bit more maybe sympathetic right now and probably change my tone a little bit. Trevor Lawrence is going to be fine and didn't take a hit that 50 other guys haven't taken over the course of the last several years. This is not a unique hit by Azeez Al-Shaair. And I'm not saying it was the right thing to do, and I'm not saying great hit. Boy, he's a victim here. He should have been penalized by the letter of the law. And I've said multiple times on this podcast, I would have suspended him for a game. Based on the totality of the incident, I would have suspended him for a game. But all this bullshit about, like, D'Amico, he should have said this, or I can't believe Nick said that. Oh, I can't believe they minimized the hit on Trevor. Sorry, don't care. All right. Jason says, what did you think of Survivor Series? I liked it. Admittedly, I had it on. For those on YouTube, you guys have seen my setup. I got the big TV with two smaller TVs above it. Survivor Series was on a smaller TV with no sound, except for the main event. Because Notre Dame, USC, no, Aggies and Tech UT were on. I had college football on the big screen all day. So I had it on the main event. I liked it. It was fine. I'm a big fan of Survivor Series and War Games, so I liked it a lot. And I'm anxious to see where this whole thing goes with CM Punk and Roman. And I like having Punk involved in this thing. This feels like a storyline he can sink his teeth into. So that's good. Dave and Round Rock, let's keep it moving with the mailbag. I want to comment on the three-game suspension for Al-Shaair. I can't say 3 games is justified, but he can appeal, I suppose. I will say he raised his arm after Lawrence started his slide and took no measures to avoid slamming Lawrence in the head area with his arm. The argument that he was trying to avoid first down yardage is bogus because the ball is spotted at the beginning of the slide, not the end. Lawrence was down short of the first down already. Bang, bang play, but could have been less violent if not avoided. Dave, there's two parts of your email that I will address. One, I will agree with, and I've said it before. The left forearm going down and driving Trevor's head into the ground, I thought was something that was avoidable. As far as knowing where, as far as Trevor started his slide short of the first down marker, so Azeez should have known that somehow, that he, you know, that he didn't get a, that he was already short of it, that's silly. Think about how fast that play is moving. You think Azeez is looking over to see where the chains are, or he can accurately see in the heat of that moment that fast that Trevor Lawrence, you know, that his shin hit 2 feet short of the first down? So that part's silly, Dave. And I know you're a loyal listener, so I'm trying to be diplomatic about this. I don't think you're going anywhere if I call that take silly. Are we serious here? Like when you say the argument that he was trying to avoid first down yardage is bogus because the ball is spotted at the beginning of the slide, not the end. So that's Lawrence was down short of the first down already. Come on. And you expect him to pull up? Bronson in the North says, is it just me or did it feel strange for Schultz to score a touchdown that easy, considering how difficult it's been to score all year? It felt like our offense last year flowed more like that play. Who's been the bigger enigma this year, and who do you think can be the bigger contributor down the stretch, Tank or Dalton? He says 8-5, 4 games left. How are you feeling about the stretch? All right, let's address the Dalton thing first. Dalton Schultz was actually our guest on the postgame show. He called that play that he scored on a training camp play where there's just such a big fuck up that you find yourself wide open. It happens a lot in camp because guys are getting their legs under them. And he just walked into the end zone. I loved it. It was great. Good to see Dalton get in the end zone. I like Dalton. I wish he was a better blocker. Who's going to be the bigger contributor down the stretch, Tank or Dalton Schultz? Or who do you think can be the bigger contributor? I'll say Dalton, because I think the ceiling for what would constitute contribution from Dalton isn't. I think like people are expecting Tank to be more like the Tank of last season, and I just don't know that Tank is coming through this door. And I don't think it's because anything physical with Tank. It's just for whatever reason, whether defenses are taking Tank away, taking the deep shots away. That's certainly what they were doing earlier in the season, playing all that cover too. But DJ is a little off, I think, on the things that would involve Tank more than the things that would involve Dalton, which is more of quick hit, short passing stuff. I think CJ, by and large, still has the touch there. How am I feeling about the stretch run? I think they're going to be 10-7 or 9-8. I think they've got definitely one more win in them. I definitely think they can win two games. Look, the Dolphins are obviously a better team with Tua than without Tua, much better with Tua than without Tua, but they're not a world beater. They don't play well against teams with winning records, with or without Tua. They're like 1-12 over the last couple of years against teams with winning records. So the game's at NRG Stadium. I would expect the crowd to be into it. Bye week, I think, is coming at a good time for the Texans fan base as well. So there's that. I would say the Titan game in week 18 in Tennessee, provided that it means something for the Texans and they're not resting guys, then I think, you know, you're coming in hopefully with some juice having lost to them earlier in the year. I think Kansas City's very beatable. You know, the Kansas City ain't the big bad wolf anymore. They should have lost to the Raiders on Black Friday. They played one score games all year long. Back-to-back weeks, they needed last-second heroics and freaky shit to beat the Panthers and the Raiders. So the Chiefs are very beatable in Kansas City. Like, I don't care that the game's in Kansas City. The only thing that would scare me there is just the weather outdoors. I don't know how good a bad-weather team the Texans are, in part because I don't know how good they're going to run the football in that type of environment. The Kansas City defense scares me more than the Kansas City offense right now in that environment. Outdoors, potential bad weather, that sort of thing. So I feel, to answer your question, France in the North, I feel okay about the home stretch. I think they're making the playoffs. I think they're winning the division. They're going to play in all likelihood the Chargers or the Ravens or the Steelers, maybe the Broncos at home. I think they can win. We'll find out if they can win a home game against the Ravens. The Ravens are the scariest out of all those teams to me just because of the Lamar and Derrick Henry effect and the experience that they have. If a first-round playoff game at home is against the Steelers, the Chargers, or the Broncos, I think the Texans can beat any of those three teams at home in a playoff game. All right, Joe Q. Your criticism of some of my comments in last week's mailbag was harsh but fair. Man, that's what I love about you, Joe Q. You know any criticism of you came from a place of love. He goes on to say, I do claim to know something about offensive line play. Now, that I know. I know. Wink, wink, Joe Q. I know. And my point was not to say the Texans' weaknesses don't matter. I have 2 points on this. One, CJ has developed some tendency to hold the ball too long. That I agree with. He had some good pockets and some good protection in this last game against, fuck, who did they play in the last game? Oh, my God. Titans at home. Then week 13. Oh, the Jags. Yeah, that's right. Trevor Lawrence. CJ had a lot of good pockets and did hold the ball a little too long. Joe Q says, two, I called out Juice Scruggs as a practice squad level player after the Jets game. I'm 75% vindicated. First, they moved him to center. Second, well, I think he was supposed to play center from the get-go. I don't think they drafted him to be a center. He was a left guard last year out of necessity and the fact that he started the season late. Second, you complained about him on the Jags preview podcast. So that's some level of vindication, Joe Q, I guess. I strongly hope to see a new body at left guard after the bye. I think they're having a hard time swallowing that second round pick, and it needs to be done. I will say this, and I have not gone back and watched the Jags game in all 22 totality. I try to do that within the few days after the game is over, but my mind is already a little bit on vacation. Juice Scruggs had the fifth highest PFF score of anybody on the Texans in that Jags game, Joe Q. His 71.9 PFF score is a big middle finger to you. Like, yeah, Joe Q, you think I suck? How about this? 71.9, bitch. And then he crotch chops. So, the Juice Scruggs situation. Joe Q says, I want to go to 5 key moments in the game, Pender Notes style, and offer a take for your comment or criticism. Okay, cool. Let's do this. And by the way, if you're not familiar with the Pender Notes, everybody, give me a follow on social media, on Twitter, at Sean T. Pendergast. Or on Instagram, I think I'm at Sean.Pendergast on Instagram. And I post all my notes I take copious notes each game with lots of curse words. And I post them after the game is over. So if you follow me on social media, at Sean T. Pendergast on Twitter, at Sean.Pendergast on Instagram, then you'll get my notes. So here are the 5 plays. Okay, I like this. First quarter, 3:12 to go, incomplete to Tank. Ball was underthrown, could have been a TD. Bitching about PI, not called, is a waste of time. Make a better throw and refs don't matter. 100% agree, Joe Q. So you and I, ding, we're in agreement on that one. something's a little off with CJ and Tank this year, man. That's the second time that CJ has either underthrown or threw a pick, right, against the Colts. No, against the Lions in week 10 to Tank. You know, and even Tank himself has had a few drops. Like, for whatever reason, the two best buds have not been on the same page this year. 100% with you on that. I thought that if you want to, if you're sitting there, if you're mad about how that play ended, make a better throw. Don't try to rely on the refs to call PI. Second quarter, 14:51 to go. Kiami, 53-yard field goal. Great to have Kiami back. We didn't know it at the time, but this won the game. The Jags would later miss their 50-plus-yard field goal, which gave us a short field for our second TD. Place kicker was the position group with the biggest advantage for Texans on Sunday. I know that sounds crazy, but Mac played pretty damn good. I don't know who Mac is. Yes, Kiami was a big factor in that game. Good to see him bounce back from the missed field goal against the Titans to be that automatic guy that you need from 50-plus yards. Second quarter, 4:20 to go, Aziz ejected. Ooh, I can't wait to see what Joe Q has to say about this. Let's add this to the list of things that make us wonder how well-coached we are. This was a bad play because it took out a QB with a 12 rating and brought one in with a 105 rating. And a big part of Mac, Mac is Mac Jones. Okay, gotcha. A big part of Mac looking good was we self-sabotaged our run defense by getting our middle linebacker kicked out. Might be the worst single snap of the DeMeco era. Now, that is a take right there. Was that the single worst snap of the DeMeco era because of the ripple effect that it had? I mean, look, you could argue, Joe Q, you sent this email before Aziz Alshire got suspended for 3 games. I am writing that down, Joe Q. You are a magnificent son of a bitch. Here we go. Worst snap of Miko era. Okay. And I don't, you know, I'd have to think of individual plays off the top of my head and so forth. You know, like I, even just a play that came up in a previous paragraph you mentioned, Joe Q. Like I think if CJ hits Tank on that, deep route in the Lions game, I think they win that game. And I think if they win that Lions game, the season unfolds a little bit differently from there. And I think how they're perceived is different. I get how they're perceived doesn't really ultimately matter in any of this, but it matters for content purposes. So single worst snap of the DeMeco era, the Aziz ejection. Now, the one general take I will say, independent of the Aziz thing, they do not play and have not played by and large this season like a well-coached football team. You know, no well-coached football team has the number of procedural penalties they do to where it's leading to 4 games with 11 or more penalties. You know what I mean? I'd almost say rather have 11 penalties for 160 yards because it means at least they were probably a few 15-yard face masks and unsportsmanlikes in there that are more penalties of aggression. When you're getting like 11 penalties for 79 yards, you know how many little mosquito bites of false starts that means you had? A shit ton, way too many. So I don't think they played like a particularly well-coached team for most of the season, if you want to know the truth, especially on the offensive side of the ball. I think the defense has been sound, but the offense has been anything but. And I think DeMeco's decision-making this year has not been as good. Game management has not been as good as it was, ironically, in his rookie season as a head coach. Worst snap of the DeMeco era. That is a take, man. Last two plays for Joe Q. I wouldn't normally spend this much time on an email, but I'm kind of enjoying this. This is a fun way for me to go back through the Jags game. Second quarter, 1:45 to go. Timeout number 3, DeMeco. What the fuck? This timeout was called for Jags' benefit, although I worry DeMeco doesn't understand that. Jags made the first down after DeMeco wisely used timeouts on first and second down. Once they got that first, there was no chance for us to get the ball back without a turnover. I'm with you on that, man. I thought the same thing. I'm like, okay, this third timeout is something that you just hold on to there in case you do find a way to get the ball back. And then that's your timeout you use, you know, to stop the clock, to get the field goal team on and stuff like that. We're totally with you on that. Joe Q, you and I are so on the same page with these plays. We're way more simpatico than we were last week, Joe Q. If you were here, I'd give you a big hug. Last one, fourth quarter, 7:49 to go. This is a great one. I mean, it's a shitty play, but it's a great observation. Drop by Nico on first down. If we'd lost this game, I think we would be spending a lot of time on this play, 100%. We'd scored on 3 drives in a row. Then Jags get a TV. That drop led to a 3-and-out. There were, as you point out, 7:49 to go. It's not just what it led to. if Nico makes that catch, it's like second and three probably, and the clock is moving too. I think that's the important thing. Soon as he dropped that, to my boss who I was watching the game with, I said, that's 40 seconds right there. That 40 seconds in the yardage too. And this team, hey, this just in, second and three is way different for this team than second and 10. So yeah, it's not a coincidence they went incomplete. I forget what that happened on. I think that might have been the sequence where it went incomplete on second down. So it's third and 10. They got 9 yards on third down, and then they punted on fourth and inches on their own side of the 50. I'm pretty sure that's that sequence right there. So yeah, it did lead to a three and out where DeMeco made another decision. I think a lot of people were hoping he would do something different there. That's the one I'm with you on the most. That Nico drop, man, that's not one you can just smile and clap your hands and go, shucks, I dropped it. No, that's a big play right there. All right. And I just answered your fourth and one question right there, Joe Q. So there you go. All right, let's keep it moving. I'm just making sure I got all my pages here. Let's see. Oh, BK. Oh, I'm sorry. No, JR and Spicewood. A few more pages here. Spicewood, listening since the first podcast, love what you do, sir. Thank you. I am so glad it's the off week. Me and the team needed a break. Stressing me out with these close games against supposedly lesser opponents. The O-line didn't play terrible on Sunday, but do you think the reason the Texans haven't moved tight to left guard is because he refuses to make the move? He's been adamant about being a tackle. Now with Blake Fisher being back, I can't come up with a reason to not have this on the field together. We want the five players out there protecting CJ. Keep up the good work. Here's the thing. This is what I think needs to be pointed out. And I don't think it has anything to do with what Titus wants to do. Dude, you're getting paid $18 million. You're going to do what we ask you to do, okay? I think the thing is, he's not a good left guard. And so you're not solving anything at that position by moving Titus over there. So then the question becomes, are you solving anything by putting Blake Fisher on the field versus Titus Howard at right tackle? And at this point, I don't know that you are. I'll say this, like if Titus happened to go out with an injury or something like that, and Fisher in, I wouldn't feel like I wouldn't be despondent about, oh, we're screwed over there. Titus hasn't had a good season, in my opinion. I don't care what his PFF score is. He hasn't had a good season. And I'm just kind of a little tired of Titus's whole vibe, honestly, probably factoring into my assessment of it. Like if Titus went out and Blake Fisher went in, I'd be like, all right, I mean, I'm confident Blake Fisher can do a decent job. But, you know, you start shuffling all these pieces and all you're doing is just shuffling around. I won't say deck chairs on the Titanic. That's a little extreme. I just don't know that you're getting a particular bump at either position. So why not leave guys at positions they're comfortable playing, particularly Titus is clearly more comfortable playing tackle than guard. I think that's why. And JR says, keep up the great work. I will do my best. BK, we're on the bye week. I want to start off like Deadpool and Wolverine movie with a montage of things I'm very much looking forward to saying bye, bye, bye to in no particular order. Okay, BK, I'm going to read these. Goodbye to not scoring TDs in the second half. We did it twice. Indeed, we did. And we didn't score shit in the first half. You know what would be amazing? Scoring two touchdowns in each half. Bum, bum, bum. They did that against the Patriots, I think, earlier this year. BK says, number two, goodbye to the talk about the Aziz hit. It was late. He was ejected. He wanted to fight everyone. He apologized. Okay, well, that hasn't happened yet, BK. I know you wrote this email like on Monday or whatever, Sunday or Monday after the game was over. We still talking about it. And I'm guessing when the appeal gets heard and we find out what the final suspension is going to be, that we'll be talking about it again. So I don't think we're saying goodbye to that anytime soon. He says goodbye to U of H losing basketball games. I've not watched any college basketball yet, so I'm not going to really dig into that one. Goodbye to bye-bye-bye to the Rockets no longer being a joke. Hell yes. They are fun. They're young. They're good. They chose basketball. They're a team you can be proud of. I really, really like the Rockets a lot with you on that. BK, bye-bye-bye to A&M pretending they are something. The Bible says that to whom much is given, much is expected. Is there an organization that is given more that produces less? I'm going to let you Aggies and Longhorns hash that one out. BK, put that question out there. Speak amongst yourselves. Finally, bye-bye-bye to the Deshaun Watson hate. He's, aha, got you, as long as Will Anderson Jr. is still playing As long as Tank Dell still scores, as long as Instagram is still scrolled, there will never be a day where Texan fans won't thank Cleveland for taking our cancer, and all his Brown failures just make us stronger. Yeah, man, like that. No Deshaun Watson trade, no Will Anderson, and no Tank Dell here. Said you and Amy enjoy Pittsburgh. The stadium is beautiful. If you're staying downtown, we are staying downtown, but we're staying in an Airbnb right across from the hockey arena. So we get in Friday night. I don't know what we're going to do during the day on Saturday. Probably watch football and drink Iron City beer. But we're going to a Penguins game on Saturday night. We have seats second level center ice. Got them on the Game Time app. Download the Game Time app and use my promo code HOST, and you'll get $20 off. And then the Steeler game on Sunday, we're going to. I'm very excited about that as well. We're in lower bowl end zone for that one. So that should be a whole lot of fun. Ah! Sorry, I had to clear the old throat ski there. And then we come home on Monday. I'll be back in studio on Tuesday. All right, a couple more. Milton Wade, how go fall on the sword for the players and their poor play? Those players need to be held accountable. Milton, I'll answer this one as quickly as you asked it. Forever. DeMeco ain't going to start throwing players willy-nilly by name under the bus. Now, DeMeco is not afraid to call out sides of the ball. I think much to much frustration with Texan fans, because it seems like the side he's more interested in protecting is the offensive side of the ball. And that's the worst of the two major parts of this football team. The answer is forever. This, like, however DeMeco's handling his business now, I assure you, this is how he's going to handle his business next season, season 5, season 10, however long he's here. And wherever he goes to coach, if he coaches somewhere else after this, that is how he's going to be. He is consistent, if nothing else. Chris says, I enjoy listening to you and Seth in the morning. I like the pod, too. Keep it up. We will. Here's my thought. Is it crazy to think we replace Slowick with Josh McDaniels in the offseason? Yeah, he's failed as a head coach twice, but you can't deny the fact that he was a successful OC in New England, could bring some stability, allowed DeMeco to have an OC for the entirety of his career in Houston because he's not going to get another head coaching job, which I agree with. Am I taking crazy pills? He and Caserio go back to their days at John Carroll, not to mention New England, so it's not as far-fetched as it may seem. Curious to get your take on this. That's come up before on our show. I'm open to it. I don't know how much the offense changes. You know, to my knowledge, Josh McDaniels is not a guy who runs the Kubiak Shanahan West Coast system. He's always been running the New England offense, which has been more of a game plan offense. You know, that's the offense that Deshaun was running all those years. There was a lot of control at the line of scrimmage. It wasn't nearly as run like zone scheme run based kind of thing. It was run-based, but a different style of running, which honestly might fit their personnel a little bit better. I don't know. I'm open to it. I like the idea in general. Just take the name out of it. I like the idea of an OC who's had head coaching experience, obviously major OC experience, but is not looking to get, nor is the league looking to put him in to another head coaching job. It would be nice to have somebody you can plug in there who's good. Look, Josh McDaniels, he made Mac Jones the rookie of the year in New England. That's a huge feather in his cap. So I would definitely be open to that. I know Josh McDaniels, personality-wise, rubs a lot of people the wrong way. He's not in a position where he's got to meet with the media every day and be front-facing for the team. The only reason Bobby Slowick is at all front-facing right now is because he's not doing his job very well. So people, way more people, I feel like, know who Bobby Slowick is and what he sounds like and looks like this season than maybe did last season. But I would definitely be open to that. I understand, too, Josh McDaniels, also a huge wrestling nerd like Caserio. So I'm open to having another wrestling nerd in the building over there that I can connect with on that level. So there's that. Last one, Murray in Scotland. Yes, we can check off Scotland. We have check marks all over the globe. Sean, big Texan fans in Scotland. Listen to Pay and Pendergast Daily. Love the show. Thank you. Great coverage. You guys make me laugh, even amongst the despair. So likely stupid question from a guy who played soccer, not football. Okay, I'm here for this. Are the skill sets between O-linemen and D-linemen that different? Oh, God, I wish Seth were sitting here right now. Seth would say, yeah, offensive linemen are fat slob oafs and defensive linemen are elite athletes. I don't know that he would say that. He would definitely take a dig at O-linemen. I think I'm pretty comfortable in that. given our O-line issues, could we stick a defensive guy in at guard? I guess not, but it could be worse. We probably can't. There's a playbook involved. You know, you got to get somebody up to speed, body types and all those things. If that were a solution, I feel like New England would have perfected that one already of snagging somebody from defense and putting them in for a few snaps over on offense. So probably not. Different body types, O-linemen a lot bigger, working in much smaller. You know, I think there's less athleticism. I don't want to get deep into an O-line, D-line thing. This would be totally like average Joe observation thing on O-line and D-line. To me, the biggest thing is that on the offensive line, Seth isn't going to like to hear this, but on the offensive line, I feel like there's probably a lot more intricacies that you need to be aware of within a play and play to play, whereas defensive line, there's certainly that as well. There's games that you're playing up front with teammates there, stunts and things like that. It feels to me like there's a whole lot more to absorb on the offensive side of the football, but I may be wrong about that. If Seth's listening to this or watching it, he'll set me straight. All right, good job, everybody. Here we go. That's the mailbag in the books. So no podcast for several days, for a week. I'm taking a week off. No preview, no recap because there's no game. I am taking a bye week as well. So big thanks. Remember, HOUmailbag@gmail.com. Still send me emails. I need some emails for next week, so send me some. And we'll open it up too. You want to throw a little college in there next week, a little Astros, a little Rockets? We'll make it a little Houston General kind of thing, or just non-sports stuff. I'm down with that too. Send whatever you want. Subscribe, rate, and review the podcast as well. Much appreciate that on the Utopia front. And big thanks to my producer, Anthony Irwin, for getting the podcast out to all of you. Big thanks to all of you for listening. This has been the Utopia Football Podcast. Enjoy the bye week, everybody.